Welcome to the Metal Hammer podcast. It is episode 74. I'm Mo and I'm here with Alice. How are you?
Hello, I'm all right.
Where the hell have you been? You've not been here for like 8 weeks or something, it's felt like. What's going on?
I haven't done the podcast for 2 weeks.
Oh, 2 weeks too long, mate. 2 weeks too long. You went off on some adventures, didn't you?
I did.
What can you tell me about that? You went to Norway, is that right?
I went to Norway, yeah.
The most metal place in the universe.
What were you doing there? I went to a festival in Halden, a place down south near Sweden.
Halden doesn't sound like a very Norwegian place.
It is.
Like it should just be on the south coast of England or something.
It's probably where we got our names, really,
yeah,
or something.
True.
Yeah, it's.
So what were you doing there? Sorry, you were at a festival?
Yes. There's a fortress there, like an old fortress.
Oh, yeah, that's
It's about 500 years old, I guess. And they used to have tons of rock there, which is probably Norway's biggest festival. It's their kind of download, I suppose.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of tons of rock.
Yeah.
Okay. This sounds like I'm pretending like we haven't talked about this before or something, but I'm actually a little bit like, where's Alice? She's in Norway. I was like, oh, okay. So I wasn't actually like exact on where you'd been. So it's in the same place Tons of Rock was.
Yes, they moved. They moved quite last minute, I think. They wanted Kiss and they thought it would be better to move to Oslo, I suppose. I guess for transport and stuff like that, it's easier, especially okay. It's a huge festival. So they moved to Oslo this year, leaving a space or a gap where they used to be, obviously, like a time slot that needed to be
like,
filled.
Yeah, you'd have like, I guess, local businesses expecting to have people around and
all that kind of stuff.
What's the festival called? I'm just going to Google it right now.
Imperium. They don't have a website yet because they were set up quite last minute. When they found out there was a slot, they were like, right, let's get in there. Let's do a black metal festival. Which
there's a black metal festival that doesn't even have a website in a fortress in Norway.
It is super underground. Yeah.
Jesus.
They have a Facebook page. So you can find them on Facebook and you can look online on metalhammer.com. And
it's all Norwegian.
I've done a sort of little lowdown on why you need to go there.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really good venue. You can see all the fjords and all the way to Sweden, I believe.
Really?
Yeah, it's right by Sweden, so it's right down south, south coast of Norway, and it's where it sort of borders with Sweden. So they used to that's why it's a fortress there. When they were having loads of battles with Sweden, their last Norway's fortress that was, I think, slightly further, maybe east, was taken over by Sweden. So that's part of Sweden now. And that was like a medieval fortress, I suppose.
This is one of those things that's just making me feel shamefully ignorant of European history.
But when that was taken, they needed a new fortress. So they moved to Halden and set one up there. And it held off the Swedes quite a few times, I believe. They'd come over by sea and try and take over, and they managed to fight them off because it's right on a hill.
Right.
So you can see everything.
Always good if you're thinking of building a fortress.
Indeed. And it's really, really cool just from like a historical point of view. It's all cobbled and like old buildings, and it's really quite quaint. It's quite small. It's not huge. The actual fortress, I think there's sort of like a wall that goes around, and it's much, much larger, and there's sort of houses, really old houses within this fortress. But the actual fortress itself is quite small. But there's a massive, massive hill you have to go down to the campsite, which keeps you fit though.
Okay, good. So it is camping and stuff as well.
Yeah, there's camping down the bottom of the hill. Tons of Rock used to have another stage sort of outside of the actual fortress, but Imperium, because it's a lot smaller and it was its first year, so it's the smallest it's going to be, hopefully. Only had the one stage inside the fortress, but that was really cool because it was really, really intimate. And it was right set in the middle of this sort of courtyard bit, so it was all cobbled and really, really cool.
That sounds awesome. Who was playing it then? Is there a single band I would have actually heard of?
Yeah, so you probably have heard of Campfire or Torker.
I have, yes.
So there's two that were playing.
Torker spelled T-A-A-K-E.
Yes.
All right, cool. Black metal cred points rolling in. So I've got two.
So there were a few other bands as well that were really, really good. Mork are really, really good. I'm wearing the t-shirt today, actually.
Oh, yeah, cool. Repping. Did you get that there?
Yeah, I did. I bought it there. I was like, yeah, respect. I'm going to buy it.
Amazing.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy as well. Thomas Serickson. He's kind of the brain behind Mork. Really old school sounding black metal, but kind of modern, I suppose, because he's in his early 30s. So, okay. Yeah, really, really good. Just, it was really friendly and really, really nice atmosphere. So that's always good. And everyone thinks, lovely. Oh, black metal is so, you know,
intimidating.
Everyone's so horrible. But no, it was one of the friendliest festivals I've ever been to.
Awesome. Yeah. And you can read more about that on metalhammer.com right now.
Yes.
Awesome. You should go and do that and top up your metal cred points, ladies and gentlemen. Loads going on this week in the world of metal. I guess the big news is news you're probably not as bothered about, in that Slipknot have released a new single.
Yeah.
So if you didn't tune in a few weeks ago, Alice dropped the bombshell on Elle and I that she's not much of a Slipknot fan. In fact, she's actually more of a Stone Sour fan than a Slipknot fan, which we didn't know was possible in the 21st century. Did you listen to Soulway Firth though? Did you give it a go?
Yeah, I did.
Did you have any thoughts? It's the third new single they've released recently, but only the second new song that's actually going to be on the new album.
Yeah. I preferred the last single.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. How so?
I don't know. There was something a little bit like less... I don't really know how to describe it. I only listened to it the once, but it was a little bit disjointed to me. Like, it was.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like quite as flowy as a song. And I guess that just made me think, like, it's not very catchy.
Yeah. That's what kind of, that's what threw me about it. But that's what I really like about it. Like, funnily enough, I think this is my favorite song they've released in the new era.
Really?
Yeah. More, I like it. I mean, I liked All Out Live. I mean, again, that was not on the album so much. I thought, I thought All Out Life was promising. I thought Unsainted was good, and you know, like you said, it was obviously much more of a single. It was like very catchy and had that vibe to it. I like them both more, having since seen them live at Download.
Yeah.
I think, but I got to say, this song really took me by surprise, because I know there's been lots of things about they're doing IOI level stuff and it's going to be a heavier record and all this kind of stuff, but I thought this song was really, really fucking heavy, actually. And I think what I actually quite liked about it, and I agree, it's almost like a disjointed thing in a way, but it just bludgeons you over the head with riff after riff after riff after riff. And it's like there's slow ones, there's fast ones, there's kind of big lumbering ones, there's like machine gun heavy, speedy ones. And yeah, it's not really catchy at all, but it's just the riffs on it are so urgent and like crushing, and it excites me to hear Slipknot sounding so like, fuck it, you want a heavy song, we're going to give you a heavy song. And I really enjoyed it. Like I said, it's definitely my favorite thing they've released from the album so far, and it's made me really, really interested to see, I guess, how that and Unsainted will bookend the record. Maybe not literally in terms of track listing, but just whether those are kind of the two sides of it, or there's going to be lots of different flavors and shades to the album. I'm really, really fascinated to hear how it sounds. So I'm into it. And we know that they're doing tour dates at some point, including UK dates next year.
Yes.
It's a bit vague in how they've announced it so far, but we know that's happening. And of course, if you want to read the most important thing in all things Slipknot, you should pick out our latest issue, which is out right now. And I went into it for a long time last week because we're very, very proud of it. But it's got 9 different covers available on the shelves right now. And I know there have actually been people out there going out and picking up all 9 covers, and you people are actual heroes. So thank you very much. We really appreciate the support. I know the guys in Slipknot are very excited about all having their own covers as well and all that kind of stuff. Got some special requests in and all that business. So it's just awesome. It's very exciting to be excited about Slipknot as a Slipknot fan.
Yeah.
What else has been going on? Loads of shit. Oh yeah, let's talk about Lacuna Coil. Tickets to this have already sold out before that we even got a chance to talk about it on the podcast. That's how excited people are about this. So sorry if you're just hearing about this now. You can't go to it because it's already sewn up. But we're very excited because Metal Hammer is going to be teaming up with the London Dungeon to put on a very special Lacuna Coil event later this year. We're going to be bringing the band into the London Dungeon on September 6th, where they're actually going to be taking fans around the dungeon experience itself before, and this is where it gets really badass, hosting a special playback of the new album Black Anima. That album's not even out until October 11th. This event is happening on September 6th. So if you manage to bag yourself a ticket for this, you're in luck, because you're going to be hearing the album over a month before it actually comes out. How cool is that? How cool is that? So yeah, very excited about that. Tickets sold out straight away, but don't worry, you don't totally miss out on the experience if you didn't manage to pick up a ticket, because we will be there on site at the time recording stuff for future publication in the magazine. We're going to be streaming stuff on Instagram. We're going to be posting about it online as well. So if you're a Lacuna Coil fan and you just want to hear more about it, even if you didn't get a ticket at the time, stay tuned to metalhammer.com to find out how you can kind of follow it all going down. But yeah, should be a laugh, shouldn't it? Lacuna Coil at the London Dungeon.
Yeah, it's a really cool place to have anything going on, really. Yeah.
And they're all like gothic and spooky and stuff, so that'll work. It's going to be wicked. Shout out London Dungeon as well for working with us to provide something really cool for Lacuna Coil fans. We're really stoked on that. What else been going on? Been talking so much, I'm out of breath. It's very hot, as you probably all know. It's toasty around here.
So Lamb of God have officially revealed that Chris Adler has left the band. So he's being replaced by the guy who's currently on tour with Lamb of God and has been for the past couple of years.
Art Cruz.
Yeah.
Which is a cool name.
Yes.
I'll say that for him. That's all I know about him, to be honest. Other than, he seemed to be really on it with Lamb of God's download. That's a big deal. Chris has officially left. We heard Randy say a few months ago that he didn't really know what the situation was with Chris. I'm pretty sure Chris has been doing some bits and bobs outside of that. He was involved with Megadeth for a while, mm-hmm. and like there was loads of stuff going on. So it's interesting that he's just gone. And the statement that Lamb of God put up was very much a kind of Art is our drummer now. Thanks a lot, Chris. Best of luck. And that was it, really. So don't know what happened there, really. Whether it was a falling out, or Chris decided he wasn't into it anymore, or what was happening.
No idea. There's been absolutely no further comment on it, really.
No, that was it.
It's a bit strange because obviously his brother's in the band still.
Yeah, exactly. Willie's still in the band, so there's obviously that dynamic there. I mean, as I said, I thought Lamb of God crushed it the other week at Download. So I don't think they've, drastically lost a ton in the live environment, but it'll be interesting to hear how that feeds into the album, because groove and pace is such an important part of what that band does. Chris was a real linchpin in that, so it's going to be interesting to see how that feeds into the next album, I guess. So just have to wait and see. But rest assured, if you find out anything else, metalhammer.com, it'll all be up there. So there you go. In vague but still very exciting news, Tool have released a new logo.
Yes.
On a video with no music on it.
Yeah.
The most Tool shit ever. People have some thoughts on the new logo. I'm quite surprised that, some people seem quite annoyed about the logo for some reason. And this is bearing in mind, this is a band whose logo used to be a spanner shaped like a cock and balls. So I don't, they've normally got a history of pandering to expectations when it comes to that kind of visual stuff. So there you go. That's the Tool news this week.
Yeah.
Can't add anything to that, really.
Not really.
No. There's Tool stuff happening. It's just happening maybe not quite as fast as a lot of diehard fans might hope. But I'm sure we'll hear more about all things Tool very, very, very soon indeed. Should we just jump straight into some reader questions then?
Yeah.
Why the fuck not? We're smashing through it today. We're trying not to melt while we're melting to our lovely new microphones we've got. www.facebook.com/MeltHammerReaders is the place to be if you want to come and hang out with us, give us feedback on the magazine, talk about the podcast, ask us questions for the podcast, any questions you might have about anything else, that's the place to come and ask him. And what's going on? Someone asked, what? Oh my god, I've lost my place.
Should I read the first one?
Yeah, go on, let's do that. I'm getting heat stroke over here.
So our first reader, who is Calvin Smitherum, I hope I said that right.
I'll take that.
So as you guys know, Sabaton have their own history channel. who else in the metal world do you think could make a decent TV channel, and what would it be?
Well, that is a good question. Mm-hmm. The first thing I thought of when I saw this was I just want Devin Townsend doing something, but I couldn't work out what it was.
Yeah.
I just want him on TV doing stuff. I think it would be amazing. I mean, I don't really want to... Oh, I totally am. I'm shamelessly feeding into the, oh, he's the nutty professor of metal thing. I'd maybe just presenting something where he does science experiments and just blows up stuff and reacts to it would be good.
Like, what's that show when it's like trying to prove the, like, whether or not things are real or not from films and...
Oh, yeah. What is that called?
Like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it.
No. That'd be good, though. I'd be down for that. Or maybe him and Ziltoid presenting some kind of like...
Children's show?
Well, I was going to say like a space show. Show about space.
Yeah, a children's
show. Those two
and
Brian Cox
space.
Or something.
Yeah.
Presenting a show about space. Doesn't that be for children? Just because he's a puppet?
Yeah.
People might want to watch it anyway.
I guess people could.
Don't look at me like that. Don't judge me. Dare you. You look at a man that signed up for a Dark Crystal... exhibition thing that's coming up in London, so I'm all
that
about the puppets,
cool,
mate. I'm all about the puppets. That's gonna be good, isn't it? Oh my word, I'm so excited for that. So yeah, I'd have Devin presenting something involving science maybe and space. Bruce Dickinson just narrating things on ancient cultures, maybe.
Okay.
Bruce Dickinson narrating like a thing on ancient Egypt or a thing on ancient Macedonia, to throw to a very specific song reference. Just Bruce Dickinson's Guide to History, but kind of like big epic historical things rather than, I don't want boring history. I want the big mighty battles and gods and thunder and castles and pyramids and all the rest of it. I basically want Iron Maiden album art, but stretched out into a 10-60 minute documentary narrated by Bruce. So that'd be good.
Yeah.
What else have I got? Have you got any?
Yeah. So I thought that Rob Zombie should obviously have like a History of Horror show.
Oh, that's really good.
It was a bit obvious, but I think it'd be really cool.
I'm annoyed I didn't think of it.
It's like just horror movies.
How has no one given him that yet?
Well,
he must have been offered
it. I don't know.
It.
I mean, Mark Gatiss did a really cool one for the BBC. He did like this sort of History of Horror. It was like three-part. Like,
I never saw that. That sounds
thing.
Awesome.
Really, really cool. It's probably on BBC iPlayer or something. But that was really good. But yeah, Rob Zombie could do a similar kind of thing. But I guess because Mark Gatiss sort of started it back in the sort of gothic horror thing.
Right, okay.
I feel like Rob Zombie could do a more like exploitation film.
Yeah.
Like the sort of like early stuff in the US and that kind of stuff, or more like slasher and zombies and that kind of stuff.
That'd
and
be awesome.
Maybe from different like countries, like, you know, how America were doing it, how Italy were doing it, etc. That'd be really cool.
I'd be well into that. And someone must have thought of this and pitched this and tried to get him to do this at some point, because
he's such
a big deal in horror and Hollywood now.
Yeah.
And music, obviously, as well. It just makes sense, doesn't it?
It does.
That'd be awesome.
I also think because I love Fenris from Dark Throne.
Ledge.
He does a lot of like hiking, so I think they should do like a Ray Mears style like thing with Fenris, and I think it would be absolutely brilliant. Like,
I'd watch the shit out of that.
Yeah.
But.
Like, he did an interview where he went hiking, and it was just brilliant. And like, he's just such a character, so I think it would be really good. And I bet he's really, really good at it as well. Like, knows how to survive in the wilderness of Norway.
Oh god, can you actually imagine? It would be incredible. But you'd have to like just throw him stuff to try. Do they have bears in Norway? Probably not. I don't think they have bears in Europe anymore, do they?
I'm not sure. I mean, they have some things. I mean, they have moose and stuff like that.
They're pretty badass.
Probably wolves.
Yeah, Fenris versus wolves in the wild. That'd be awesome. I know I've just kind of made it a bit trashy,
his
celebrity
name
death match.
Is from the Norse
mythology, yes.
Yeah.
Do you know how I knew this? Because, I've seen they play on it in Thor Ragnarok as well, actually.
Okay.
But I've been literally this week reading that thing that Neil Gaiman did, you know, the Norse mythology thing. It's absolutely wicked. Have you read it?
No, I haven't.
He literally just takes about, I don't know, between 10 to 15, I guess, what are a classic traditional Norse mythological tales, and and just kind of tells them in his kind of very Neil Gaiman-y way. So just quite chummy and fun and pacey and good. And it just, it's like a kind of like, feels like Neil Gaiman himself is like sat around the campfire with you just telling these stories. And Fenris was in that. And I noticed Fenris. Cool. I was like, oh yeah, that's where he gets it from, isn't it?
Wolf.
A massive wolf.
Yeah.
Absolutely massive. So yeah, I would watch that. I was just thinking as well, have you seen the, because I was thinking about that Metal and Horror thing, and I was thinking, I swear Rob's done stuff like that before, but I was thinking of that Metal and Horror documentary that Mike Schiff's been trying to crowdfund. We did a thing on it in the magazine a couple of years ago, and we did a kind of catch up with him recently.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if we talked about it on the podcast before, we might have, but if people who are into their horror and metal, as we certainly are, and many people who are into metal are, you should look up the History of Horror and Metal documentary. He's got a crowdfunder on Indiegogo and stuff, and he's basically got like, I mean, anyone who's anyone. I think like Robert Englund's in it, and John Carpenter's in it, and then he's also got like Corey Taylor and Rob Zombie and John Five and all these people just doing this massive, big kind of interview segments and commentary on the history of metal and horror, because it, you know, the two do really go back together and work really well. So that just suddenly popped to mind for some reason, but if people are into the whole metal and horror thing, people should go and look that up immediately. And if you fancy donating, I think you can donate. Or if not, just read more about it and spread the word, because I would love to see that made. He's been making it for about 5 years now, so I want to see it happen.
Yeah.
Honestly, it looks fucking wicked. I think Kirk Hammett's in it and everything.
Yeah,
it's proper, like,
I was going to say, he's
high-profile
he's
metal
one.
And horror people. So there you go. Oh, I also put down in... Did you have another TV show? Sorry, I don't know if you have more.
No.
No.
Yeah, that was it.
Well, I did. I had mine got a bit out of control because I started. Well, originally I was like, oh, maybe Zoltan Bathory from Five Finger Death Punch could present like some kind of MMA show, because he does, I think he does judo.
Okay.
He does something anyway. I was always seeing him on Instagram throwing people about. And then I thought, oh, and you could get Matt Heafy on it because he does jiu-jitsu. And then I thought, oh, maybe you could just do like a UFC style MMA tournament just with loads of metal people on it, so you could have like Zoltan doing judo, Matt Heafy doing jiu-jitsu, I think it's Carl from Nile or one of the Nile guys does what's that thing called, a thing that Sean from Classic Rock does that I was asking about earlier, Carl McGrath or something like that,
yeah, Krav Maga.
Krav Maga, he does that, so you could have him doing that. I think Nurgle does kickboxing.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's loads of stuff you could do, just chuck them all at each other and make them fight, it'd be amazing.
Yeah, that
would
not
watch that.
I would probably watch it.
Well, we need to get on Dragon's Den immediately, get the shit funded. Jeremy Saffer, who does a lot of excellent photography for Metal Hammer as well, has asked a question in this week's podcast. He has asked, what's, this is quite a deep one in a way, what killed the touring festivals? So I guess we don't really have a touring Ozfest anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Vans Warped Tour bit the dust. We used to have the big tour that I think was sponsored by Monster that all the big metal bands used to go on, and now it's just left my mind.
Taste of Chaos, that was one.
Yeah, Taste of Chaos was another one. What was the massive one that
I don't know.
It only went until a couple of years ago. Oh, man. Loads of people are probably screaming at the podcast right now. But yeah, anyway, that was another big one that bit the dust a couple of years back. Metal touring.
They still have them across the US, don't they? There's still a couple that tour the US.
I don't know if there are in like the same way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What the hell was it called? I can't remember. But yeah, there used to be big metal tours, especially, that used to have these huge bills, and they were, you know, there were festivals and they used to go right across the US, and it doesn't really happen quite as much anymore.
Yeah.
Do you have any theories as to why? I've got a few thoughts.
I don't really know. I guess festivals in general are getting more complex and more interesting, and not just about the bands, like becoming like a fully fledged event. So I guess it would be hard to do that with a touring festival.
Yeah, sure.
Because so much planning goes into it. And
I think that the there's just, like you said, there's festivals everywhere now.
Mm.
And even 10 years ago, if you wanted to see, you know, a big touring package, where whether it was Warped or the metal equivalent, which is going to annoy me until the end of my days now. Like Slayer were on it and Manson was on it and I can't remember. You would have to go and see all those kind of... You'd have to basically wait for that to come within, I don't know, 500 miles of where you live. Because obviously America's so huge, you'd probably have to travel wages to get to see it anyway. Whereas now, there's all these mega festivals that are popping up all over the place. I mean, there's the West Coast ones, East Coast ones. There's big ones in Canada. There's big ones further down south. You're probably going to have your own, in quote marks, festival now. A lot nearer to you than you would have 10 years ago. And I think that's made a big difference. I think stuff like, you know, Chicago Open Air and Aftershock and Heavy Montreal and is it Sonic Festival they got this year? Rock on the Range was another big one. Like, they've got all these massive, massive festivals now that draw absolutely huge bills. And so a lot of the time those bands all end up being quite similar lineups anyway. So if you kind of see Disturbed popping up at it like springtime in, I don't know, Ohio for Rock on the Range, there's a good chance you'll see them in Chicago a month later, and then you might see them end up at Heavy Montreal. Like, it's not all exactly the same bills, but it's kind of the same principle in a way. So I kind of think that's quite a big part of it. But yeah, there's a few reasons. I mean, with Vans Warped Tour, I kind of feel like that scene hasn't really lasted in the same way.
No, I think a lot of that has kind of died out itself. Yeah. Like, a lot of that whole kind of music, I suppose, like the whole everything that goes with it. So I don't think that's really because it was a touring thing.
No. Yeah, I agree. Like, pop punk and, you know, all its kind of family tree are not really producing bands on the same level that even metal is. I mean, people always go, oh, metal's not producing big enough bands. But if you look at it in the US especially, like Five Finger Death Punch can headline festivals over there. Disturbed can headline festivals over there. Korn headline festivals. Godsmack and all those kind of more beigey bands headline festivals. So there's shit tons of bands that can do that. But if you're trying to find... I mean, Vans Warped Tour didn't tend to have bands quite that big anyway by the end. But it's quite hard to sell for it to turn over enough fresh big bands to keep that all moving, I think.
Yeah. And a lot also of the ones that you see, sorry, in that scene, they're all ones that have been going for like decades anyway. They're not new.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the kind of way what we have always called in the office, like the Warped Tour metal bands. So basically all the bands that kind of came in the wake of like Asking Alexandria. So bands like We Came As Romans and that other one that's named, I've forgotten, I'm not doing very well today. What are they called? I can't remember. But all those kind of like quite like shiny, well-polished, you know, catchy chorus metal bands. Of Mice and Men, you can kind of probably throw into that as well, even though they started off a bit on the heavier side. I don't think that scene's lasted very well. I don't think it's aged well at all. It feels quite dated. And I don't think that, I feel like the next generation of heavy bands that have come along afterwards are far more suited to kind of metal bills than they are to Warped bills.
Yeah.
So, you know, bands like Power Trip and Venom Prison and Code Orange and, you know, various other bands that people are getting excited about, Vain and, you know, tons and tons of them. They don't really fit the same mold as all those kind of nice, shiny, lovely bands that were doing Warped Tour a few years ago.
Yeah.
So there's not really, it's just not the bands for it. But I don't know if we need it.
No.
Festivals like that, I mean. I think it'd be good if we could have something like Warped Tour, but I don't know if we need a specific touring festival in the same way.
No.
Although I'm sure there'll be people that could point out that it probably managed to travel to a lot of places that these new big ones don't, so I don't know really.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of angry Americans going, fuck you, I have to travel to like wherever to do it now. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, it's a weird one. It's a weird one. Did you ever go to Warped Tour or any of those things?
No, never went.
Oh, well, I went once 4 years ago and it was already kind of, it was, I don't want to say it was on its last legs or anything. Cause
it took ages to come across here anyway, doesn't it? It was like...
Yeah, it kind of had a couple of stabs at coming over here and it never quite settled in, did it really? I went to one in America.
Okay.
In I went to two shows on the 2015 Warped in New Jersey and upstate New York. And it was good. Like, I had a great time. But again, it was like the bands on that bill were like Miss May I and While She Sleeps and Crossfaith. And I don't feel like that generation of bands has been replaced by a generation of heavier bands that would work at Warped. And I don't know enough about the popular end of the rock spectrum to know who would be booking on that, getting booked on that lineup.
No, I think it was kind of like, well, it started off a lot of like skater rock, punk pop, then going into more like, I guess, some of the emo and screamo bands of the noughties and stuff. But now it's just, I don't know if there's any of that really going on much. It's just...
No, it's weird, isn't it? Like, I see bands like Bleeding Through coming back and those kind of guys. Again, they were very much of the heavier generation, but they definitely were kind of a Warped Tour band.
Yeah.
You know, they come back and it's kind of not a massive deal, really. And I think they're a great band, and I know people that are very excited about it, but I think, you know, their Matreu is probably another one you could say. Like, a lot of bands from that mid-noughties burst that haven't come back in quite as big a way as maybe you would have thought they could.
Yeah.
Which isn't a knock on the quality of them or anything. It's just, I don't think... that's what it comes down to. I'm not sure when it comes to Warped that the scene's there for Warped right now. Maybe if there was a big shift in where heavy music was at again, it could come back in a slightly different way. I think it's still doing bits and bobs at Warped, but it's not...
Yeah.
It's not...
There are like a couple of bands I could see probably doing that kind of thing. Like Idols maybe, and like Glassjaw and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even those two bands that were like 20 years apart, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it shows you that it's not a lot going on there at the moment. I mean, there is a big punk thing. Hardcore is still very much very influential on a lot of stuff that's out there right now. So I don't know.
It's just not as many bands coming through, I don't think.
Not that would fit Warped, I don't think. I think heavier stuff, there's more stuff than there's been in a few years at the moment, which is great. But, you know, if you look at, for instance, what we cover in the new pages section of Metal Hammer and the new noise section, and you think how many of these bands would have fit on a Warped Tour bill even 5 years ago, there's not many there, especially compared to what it was like around 2010 to 2012 kind of time. I just kicked the mic. Is that okay? It's fine. Still finding our way through this lovely new equipment we've got going on. Should we do another one?
Yep.
You can ask this one if you want.
Okay. because I actually couldn't think of a response, so.
I couldn't either. I had to cheat the question a bit. I cheated the question.
With the remixes of Auschlander, etc., what's your favourite remix of a metal song? Big fan of the Carpenter Brute mix of Dance Macabre myself. It turns up the 80s goodness. That's from Aidan Delaney.
Yeah. I don't know why you're so nervous about saying his second names. Delaney's all right.
I just don't want to get it wrong.
Yeah. Aidan Delaney. I couldn't think of anything for this either. No, I'm not a big fan of people remixing metal songs at all. I don't like it. I don't even like it when, you know, more industrial bands like Manson and Fear Factory used to put out like remix albums, didn't they? Like Manson had, I can't remember what it was called, but he had his remix album off the back of the Antichrist tour. And then Fear Factory had Remanufacture.
Yeah.
I didn't even like those. It's not my jam at all. But if it counts, and it's not a metal song really, because even Numb wasn't a metal song in of itself, but the Jay-Z Linkin Park Numb versus Encore mix is obviously a classic. But that's more of a mashup, which made me think of the Judas Priest Lady Gaga mashup from about 8 years ago. That's fucking amazing. You heard it?
No.
Painkiller mixed with Judas.
No.
Oh, it's so good. I'll send you the video after this. It's so well done. But again, that's a mashup. It's not really like a remix of a track. So yeah, I'm at a loss for that. If people listening are on the Facebook page, comment any that we might be missing, because I couldn't think of any that I was really into.
Yeah, I'm trying to like look now at like some of the industrial-y stuff that I like, and I just
Yeah.
They're not really remixes. They are remixes, but the remixes within themselves kind of thing.
Yeah. It's not the same thing.
No.
Yeah. Set us straight on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Melthammer Readers and let us know what the fuck we're missing, because I'm sure there's some out there that we're not big on. Although I must admit, I did think the Carpenter Brute mix of Dance Macabre was good, but I still don't think it was better than the original, actually. So yeah, there you go. I bet this is one you can answer. Summers David, what a wonderful name, asked, what are all of your opinions, all two of us, on Type O Negative? Who we've not talked about a whole lot. I thought you might say that. Do you want to talk about how you got into Type O Negative then? Because to me, as a new metal kid, they were kind of coming to the end of their run when I was getting into metal. And then it was only really when Pete died that I saw all the furor about it. And then I actually went and checked out and thought, oh, these guys are really cool. They weren't on my radar at all growing up.
I don't know, because I wasn't a new metal kid. I didn't like new metal when I was growing up. So,
who was your first metal band? Did we talk about this before?
Not really. I used to like classic rock, and then I liked punk and grunge. So I guess grunge was kind of my gateway, like Alice in Chains.
Right.
And then from there, I got into like more thrash, so Metallica, stuff like that. And yeah, I didn't get into metal until later. I kind of got into Faith No More, stuff like that, more sort of 90s.
How did you get into all these kind of bands? Because
I have no idea. I just like searched a lot. I was kind of a nerd. So,
because again, Faith No More and Alice in Chains. I mean, Alice in Chains really weren't a kind of around when I was seeking out music. Like, I didn't see them advertised anywhere. They weren't really getting their videos played. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, no, I always liked stuff that was different, or just I didn't listen to the new metal stuff. I had friends that did, but I just never really got it. And I was always quite old school and just would seek out stuff that was older and like look on all sorts of different things. Like when I was a teenager, there was I guess MySpace and like Last.fm and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then magazines, and then MTV2. That was a good one. They'd play.
Yeah, MTV2 used to be pretty badass, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was like they moved all the music that it originally championed into MTV2.
Yeah.
And then just quietly got rid of it completely.
Yeah. I really liked that. So I used to just like old stuff. And so I kind of went through, it took me a while to get into like more metal. I kind of got into then like doom and stuff because of my old school tastes.
Right.
So doom and sludgy stuff and that kind of heavy, and then eventually kind of got into more death metal and stuff like that. But I always liked goth stuff though.
Right. So, okay, that was good. Your next question.
Because I was like old school, like classic rock, psychedelic rock, anything that was like generations before me, really. And I used to love,
you're talking 80s. About Heavy Load. Have you been there yet?
Yeah, I have.
You have, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. But I also love 80s goth stuff. So like I was kind of obsessed with the 80s as well. I guess I liked hair metal as well when I was a teenager. So that was like another sort of metal that I liked. But I also liked like 80s pop, like Duran Duran, The Cure, like Joy Division, Depeche Mode, Tears for Fears. All of that kind of stuff.
Nice.
And early 90s goth stuff as well. So it kind of just fitted into that. And like, I've got like some compilations of like goth music.
Yeah.
Like compilation CDs. And they've got like All About Eve on them. Love All About Eve. And they've got like random, they're really random because it's just like all sort of like 90s goth stuff. So they've got like Type O Negative and All About Eve, but then they got like Cradle of Filth.
Really?
It's just like, so you put it on, and like I used to work in a crystal shop, so I used to play a lot of like gothy stuff or 80s stuff or just things that are a little bit like more accessible for people, but also alternative and kind of like dreamy because it was like crystals, and you get a lot of metalheads that come in there. So
yeah,
but I'd get told off by the manager if I put on too much metal. So I had this compilation, but as soon as it got to Cradle of Filth, it would be like, I was like, no, shit, skip it. Like, if no one was in the shop, it was fine. But yeah, it was like the rest of the CD was really like chilled and relaxed and like kind of like, you know, old school gothy. So it was quite tuneful. And then like Cradle of Filth in the middle.
Forever ruining everything for everyone. And I wouldn't want it any other way. But yeah, so Type of Negative, a big deal to you.
Yeah, I really like them.
They're amazing. It always amazes me how, I guess, inevitably, if you just not have been active at all with Pete passing away. I mean, that must be nearly 10 years ago now.
Yeah, it's crazy. Think so.
But they're still very much under the radar of a lot of people. Like, you look on Spotify and they don't have a single song that's gone over, I think, like maybe 7 million streams, which is not a lot, really, for what were a big and very important band in the 90s. But yeah, bangers. Their two biggest songs are like nearly 10 minutes long each or something, aren't they? Ridiculous. Black Number One's really long. I'm going to have to check this now.
Is it that long?
It's pretty long. Let me check. How do I play this without accidentally playing it on the mic?
Maybe I just enjoy it too much to realise how long it is. That's like the same length as like Bat Out of Hell.
Yeah, Black Number One is 11 minutes.
Oh my God.
Or the album version.
Is there a shorter version?
Yeah, there must be.
Yeah.
And yeah, even Christian Women is 8 minutes. 9 minutes.
Oh my God.
It's pretty banging. No messing around. No messing. So yeah, shout out Type O Negative. Very cool bands. If you haven't heard them before, you probably should have picked up our very cool 1994 issue with Machine Head on the cover, which you can still pick up online at myfavoritemagazines.com or .co.uk. Can't remember which one. We do a really cool feature on Type O Negative, and we talk to at least one of the surviving members. It's one or two of them. I can't remember. I'm sorry. I haven't read it for a few months, but it was an awesome piece, and you should definitely go pick that up and then jam their music very, very, very loud. Sally Lowen has asked us on Twitter, where's Avenged Sevenfold?
Yeah.
Just very simple. We don't know. They are very much enjoying making the most of Call of Duty with Matt Shadows being a playable character on it now, I think. That's what happened, wasn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you can play as Shadows on one of the Call of Duty games. I'm not into Call of Duty. I've only just got around to playing Red Dead Redemption 2, so I am well behind. When did the stage come out? The stage came out at the end of 2016, and they did a couple of big world tours off the back of that. So you'd kind of expect them to be out of the public eye for a little bit now. I would reckon there'll be a new Avenged album next year. I don't know that, but I'd be very surprised if it wasn't, because this is 3 years since the last one now, so it's about time. And I have no idea what it will sound like, and that's how I like it. There's one big kind of question that someone posted, not normally on the Facebook page and Twitter. We actually ask, like, oh, give us some questions for the podcast, but this is one someone posted separately, so I hope he doesn't mind us reading it, because I thought it sparked a really interesting debate. But Pip Dunbar was asking about Steel Panther, who we had a studio report with in either this issue out now or another one recently, where he kind of talks about Me Too, and he's, you know, doing his kind of classic Michael Starr Steel Panther shtick. I haven't explained that very well. In the studio piece with Steel Panther. I don't think Michael Starr does the interview. I think it's Satchel. One of them's in the photo and the other one does the interview. That's what's throwing me. Anyway, so Pip Dunbar's point is, he says, upon reading the brief interview with Steel Panther, his response to Steel Panther's music in a post-Me Too world is rather predictable. I know Steel Panther are a parody of glam metal, so it's not that I'm taking them too seriously. Rather, I feel like brushing off any potential criticism as political correctness is both lazy and irresponsible. Listening to Steel Panther won't turn you into a raging misogynist, but it can help to reinforce existing subconscious bias or treat sexism as no big deal. Basically, a little bit of consideration towards how music reflects our real-world attitudes is all that's needed. And this sparked quite a big conversation between a few of our lovely readers and followers on the Facebook page. And I thought it was quite an interesting thing to talk about, really, because we are in a kind of uncharted waters now when it comes to the post-Me Too world and how that affects music and how that affects the media. What do you kind of think of Steel Panther and their whole shtick? I guess generally, but I guess more pertinently in light of what the climate's like now.
I've always sort of thought, oh my God, this is shocking. But at the same time, it's kind of, it's a joke and it is kind of a parody anyway. So I kind of feel like it's...
Sorry, it's Armin from IT. Shout out Armin from IT. What's going on? Is that going on?
So, yeah, I feel like because it's a parody, it's kind of bringing attention to it in the way of like, it's making fun, but it's pointing out how awful that kind of culture was and like how it shouldn't be okay in a way. Or at least this is how I sort of like justify it in my own head. I feel like they are kind of pointing it out in the way that they are being so like overtly stereotypical for that sort of, that kind of genre of music and the 80s and 90s culture of like the rock star and the sexism and the, all of the sort of sex, drugs, rock and roll, extreme kind of...
Hedonism.
Yeah. So isn't that kind of, I think that's kind of like drawing our attention to it, making fun of it, but also we're sort of having to think about it and think, this is not okay. Like,
that's an interesting, I mean, I've never thought about it like that actually, that it's almost ousting it by proxy of.
Because it's just so like, it's so over the top that it's like, it's pointing it out, but I also think that it's, I don't think anyone would like follow it because it's so sort of.
What
out
about
there.
When you get to? Because I kind of agree with you about the point that it, you know, it's a parody, and you know, to be a as someone put on the Facebook page, I think it was Steve Hill actually, one of our writers, said, you know, to be a parody, you kind of need to reinforce the thing you're parodying in a you know, over the top cartoonish way.
Yeah, but that's kind of like Alan Partridge, for example.
Right, exactly.
But it does draw attention to that kind of like how ridiculous it is, and it makes people laugh, but it also probably makes you think a little bit about the kind of thing it's parodying.
What do you think about, because sometimes when you see Steel Panther at gigs, they'll get girls up on stage and some girls will strip and all that kind of stuff, and I guess sometimes with that I kind of go, well, now we're like down the rabbit hole because
they've just,
it's a joke, but the stuff that this is actually happening, this isn't, these people aren't paid to kind of pretend like they're part of the joke. But are they, but is it just a bit of a joke? If someone wants to do that, it's not my place to tell them not to, but it's a bit of that, it's that weird thing where you're like, is it a joke or is this like, has the joke eaten itself?
Personally, I kind of think it's like the misunderstanding it, and I think it's a sort of like just, that's just how it is at the moment. And I think we're kind of like steering away from it anyway. I think that like girls have, there's a lot of girls that do stuff like that because it's kind of like part of our culture and it's part of like, it's almost acceptable. But I think now with the Me Too movement and stuff like that, it's, people are starting to question it and think like, this isn't how it should be. So maybe they are kind of not really getting that it's a parody. I don't know. Because they're sort of just, to me,
maybe they do, but they don't care.
I don't know.
That's the thing. I've got no idea.
Who knows? But I'd like to see less of that at rock concerts generally. Like,
it feels a bit played out. And you know, I think I do wonder if Steel Panther and I haven't heard the new record. It's due out later this year. But I do wonder if Steel Panther had made another album as good as that first album, if people would be asking these kind of questions, because the first album is, I mean, it's one of the best rock album, like rock, kind of heavy rock albums of, I think it is about 10 years old. So I'd say of the last 10 years, it was so good. And I think when your music is, when you're able to kind of take the piss, but produce music that brilliant, I think people don't allow themselves the room to start questioning the other stuff as much, because the music, to me, as hilarious as Steel Panther can be, the music is what made me think this band are fucking great, because the album's, so, I mean, that album's better than anything people like Motley Crue and Poison have done in, the better part of 30 years in some cases. So I wonder if they could do with maybe producing an album that recaptures that magic, that would maybe kind of make people not feel like they have to maybe just overthink what is essentially an admittedly not very long running joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. Because like, it's the same with other genres of music when it's really, really extreme. And some of it, I think it's all to do with like pointing out these things, and it's just to shock. And sometimes it is just kind of shock value. But I see, I'm not really into censorship or anything like that. I'd rather things just be like out in the open, because I think that just hiding it is probably going to end up with more complications. And yeah, just honesty with everything. But I think they're just a parody band, and I think it doesn't offend me. There's a lot of sexism in there, like huge amounts. But I think the ability to laugh at some of this stuff can be quite a good thing anyway.
Sure.
And I think that, yeah, it is comedy to me. And comedy is supposed to sort of do that. It's supposed to make you think. So if it is making you think, and if it is stirring up these kind of conversations, then isn't that a good thing?
Very interesting.
When like Motley Crue weren't stirring up any of this. It was just acceptable. Like
very, very, yeah, that is very true. And also, you know, I mean, do people really expect, like, Steel Panther, it's like Spinal Tap. You wouldn't go to Spinal Tap and be like, has the toxicity of rock music gone too far? You know, like, wouldn't happen. So it's a bit of a weird, I guess they just blur the line so well that they've got us all talking like this. It's the thing, because they're so good at what they do, Steel Panther. Like, they just, no one really knows what lines there are to draw, if, like you say, there need to be lines.
Yeah.
Who knows? First album still bangs, though. I know that much.
Yeah.
That'll just about do it for this week, I reckon. We'll be back next week, of course. Hopefully not sweating into a puddle of eyes as we are on this sofa right now. Cheers for listening, everybody. Don't forget to go out and pick up the latest issue of Metal Hammer. It's a Slipknot Spectacular featuring an art print by Luke Priest that is gloriously awesome, plus a CD of Slipknot classics covered by some of the most exciting young bands in the game, and a couple of brand new tracks on there as well. 9 different covers split across newsstands all around England. Most of them have all sold out online as well. In fact, the bundles that we announced this week have sold out online as well. So if you want to get this issue, get out there and pick it up in shops, because it is going, and you don't want to miss out on it because it looks lovely. Get a couple of them and slice them up and put them on your walls. cheers very much, everyone. Yeah, exactly. Why not? And if you do that, you're absolute heroes, and we love you very much. Thank you. We always appreciate the support. We will be back next week. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.